This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a conversation with Katya Sengel, who, in addition to being an adjunct professor at Cal Poly State University, is an avid baseball fan, so much so that she's the author of Bluegrass Baseball, A Year in the Minor League Life. And she spent a year on the road following and embedded with minor league baseball teams. Katya Sengel.
Thanks, Tom. It's fun to be back with you. Bluegrass Baseball, A Year in the Minor League Life, kind of chronicled life in, it's a nonfiction book about life in the minor leagues. In 2010 season, I followed around four different teams in the minors and did a bit of the behind the scenes, what life is like for the players, their families, and other people associated with the teams.
You were living in Kentucky at the time and working as a journalist for a newspaper in Louisville, right? Or Lowell.
I was going to say, you almost had it right. They always told me, I finally got to say Louisville. You kind of swallow it, but they still said, no, you don't say it like a local, even after, I think I was there 8 years, and I was a features reporter at the Louisville Courier-Journal. Mm-hmm. My editor one day had told me he wanted me to do a series about the AAA team there, which is the step before the majors, the Louisville Bats, and they were the AAA team for the Cincinnati Reds. And at first when he said that, I said, I don't want to follow around baseball players. But actually, the book came out of that first story.
You spent almost a year off and on the road, following them in their buses and whatnot. And there was a little sexism involved in there, right?
There was. There's the rule that you're allowed to go into the locker rooms as a female, but there's kind of the pressure of players would be like, yeah, you can come in, but you don't really want to come in, do you? And also, you don't really, because the one time I did go in, someone accidentally drops a towel. There are other things. I was allowed in the dugout, but they would talk differently than when I was there as a woman. So.
But you weren't allowed to ride on the bus, right?
Yeah, no, and that one wasn't actually just the woman thing. I think that one was more, or at least they said it was an insurance thing. I don't know where it goes, but I could drive along behind it, so that's what I did.
Let's talk a little bit about AAA, AA and single A minor leagues. That's something that I'm still learning.
Yeah, and they make it even more complicated every time you think you have it. Sometimes they have rookie ball. These are all the farm leagues. So each major league team will have their farmer feed ones, and they'll have AAA is right before the major leagues. So if you're in AAA, they always say you're one phone call away from being in the majors.
Yet some people from single A go right to the majors too. So they leapfrog, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of the trick is AAA, yes, you're one step from the majors, but a lot of people say if you were really good, you would have been taken up earlier. So AAA can also be kind of a dead end almost in some ways.
Your last hope.
Yeah. I mean, some of those guys, they'll be the career minor leaguers who will get called up the end of each season for and then start in AAA again the next season and never really make it on that original roster. So, and then you've got AA, which is the one below AAA, and that's kind of your middle ground one. And then you've got single A, semi the lowest, except a lot of times teams also have rookie league, which is a really, really short. It's not even the same season. All these seasons are shorter than the major leagues, but rookie is even shorter, and that's where guys can first go. But some don't have rookie or will skip rookie. And then some teams have low A and high A, so they just keep making it more and more complicated for you to understand.
Well, I was with the Timber Rattlers in Wisconsin, and they're single A, and yet they were telling me how cool it was when you have an injured player that kind of comes down to recuperate and get ready to go back. So they have this star, and it just drives the attendance crazy.
Yeah, I remember the Lexington Legends. They were one of my Class A teams, and they had a star, and I'm blanking on the name right now, who came down, and while he was playing with them, he redid their dugout and everything for them. So that's always pretty fun. And then there's unaffiliated. Those are teams that aren't actually affiliated with a major league team. And the team I followed during that time, the unaffiliated team, the Florence Freedom, they had someone's son. Oh, Pete Rose Jr. So Pete Rose Jr. was one of their coaches because they play right by Cincinnati and that's where he's based. So you get some of these big names mixing in. In AAA, when I was there, at the Louisville Bats had Araldos Chapman, and he had come over from Cuba, really fast pitcher. And before they put him into the majors, they just wanted him to get used to just American baseball rules and stuff. So he was in AAA for a while.
And how about ownership? You know, who typically owns the feeder team?
That's a fun one. I with Florence Freedom, I got to know the owner a little bit and told stories about the first person who had that team had kind of gotten in trouble with the law and some certain things. So it was really interesting background on how it all came. And the owner himself, it was just, it had always been his dream, and he's older now and was mostly retired and just decided he was going to do a baseball team.
Because I naively always thought it was the major league team would own the little farm team, but that's not the case.
No, yeah, they just get affiliation, which just means their players will go up there and they have certain rules they have to follow.
Another aspect that I learned for the first time from reading your book was how these players live and make it or barely squeak by. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think that was the most interesting for me too. I learned a lot because I live pretty frugally, I thought, until I went to some of their apartments and I saw they've got, it's supposed to be, I think, 2-bedroom, and it's with at least 4 guys, sometimes 8, 9 guys, and they use shower curtains to separate rooms into more rooms. And what were some of the other tricks they used? Oh, to save money. One guy, he buys his TV at Walmart and then he returns it after you can return it after 30 days. And because the season's short, you just return it, then get another one and return it. So he'd leave. This came up because I noticed the plastic was still on his TV. And so he'd do that with his furniture and stuff. Because what's the point of spending all this money on furniture in a place far from where you actually live? You're only going to be a couple months.
But again, the backstory is because they don't have the income and the money to buy anything.
When that was a guy who had a huge signing bonus, but then your actual salary when you're in the minor league team is really small. So during the season, you don't have time to have another job. But off season, they'll work as waiters. They'll have all sorts of teachers, all sorts of things, because they can't make enough money.
Their compensation might be $1,200, $1,500, $1,800 a month.
I'm trying to remember exactly, but I remember as a writer, I was full-time then, so I had a little more money. I was impressed with how little it was, and I'm used to small salaries, so I think it could even be less than that for some of them, possibly. It's pretty small.
And then the other dynamic, which I found most touching and met some people in Wisconsin, that are host families.
I love the host family aspect. I think that happens a lot in rookie league. And then of the teams I followed, the unaffiliated team, Florence Freedom, still did host families too. And I talked to the woman who organizes the host families, and she warned me about, you know, there was one woman, she'd been hosting different players for several seasons. And she said, there was only one bad player and he'd peed on the bed after he was cut because he was upset. He was cut from the team and he thought she had something to do with it because she was close with the coach and things. And so, but other than that, she had no bad things to say, and they get really attached.
And a lot of the host families go on season after season and bring new kids in that's part of their lifestyle.
Yeah, this woman, she, even after that one bad experience, she kept doing it. She's been invited to their weddings years later. She keeps track what they go on to do, because few of them, especially that was the unaffiliated team, actually end up playing professional baseball or sticking with baseball, so they go on to regular lives. I think one asked her advice on the engagement ring to buy for his girlfriend. Another host family had children who were young teens, and they really enjoyed having the players there because it was educational for their kids. And one is a girl got to be more of a teenager. I asked if the parents worried or anything, and she said no. Most of the guys are really well behaved, and usually they're not there that much. Their hours are so different. They're always playing games or on the road. And then they're sleeping or eating when they're there.
Minor league teams, for a lot of towns, that's their big time. That's as close as the kids in town are going to get to watching the pros. So it's very much a huge support and backing of the community.
Yeah, and I think that's what's neat too with the minors. After they have, afterwards, a lot of those teams, they'll have kind of mingle where you can actually get to see the players up close and you can get their autographs without much trouble. They'll do little events and things where usually at minor league games, kids can do something, races on the field and everything. So you're much closer to the game and the players.
So it really is an integral part of some of these communities.
Yeah, I think it is. We don't have a minor league team here in San Luis Obispo, but we have Summer Collegiate, which is another.
And that's the San Luis Blues?
Yeah, the San Luis Blues. And, you know, so that's the only semi-professional.
It's not a minor league.
No. Another one of those fun ones. No. Let me see if I can get it right. They're between high school and in college, or is it just high school age? But so I think they're actually semi-professional, but they're definitely not full professional. And there's some good players, and you may well see them in the majors at some point.
A player that signed up and is playing for the San Luis Blues, would their hope be the next year to go on to AAA or?
Yeah, they probably wouldn't go straight to AAA. They might go to Class A or something like that. And I think they have a list of some of the guys who've actually played in the majors who were with the Blues before. So it's your chance at an affordable price and in town to see some good baseball players who might be really good later.
See, I knew them when.
Exactly.
Tell us a little bit more about your time on the road following the minor leagues in Kentucky.
It gets exhausting because I guess I didn't think about it too much, but when you're following four teams in the same season, and there are no real days off in baseball, maybe one day off a month, often that day off is a travel day. So I'd have to figure out, okay, which team am I going to go follow this weekend and which team will I do another weekend? So kind of balancing all that. And then some games are just so hot, especially you're around Kentucky in the summer. And I think there was this one field that was black in parts. It was AstroTurf. I forget. It was something weird, but the players talked about it. It was almost like melting there, and baseball games are long. It can be a long haul. I mean, for the players, even more so, but sometimes I'd sit with the families in the stands, and they'd get tired with the games. They'd talk about with really hot games, what they'd bring to make it through the game.
Talk to us about your book. You spent a year doing your research, true field research, and then transmuted it into a book. How does the book flow and how is it laid out?
Yeah, I actually had been working with, because I was in Kentucky at the time, working with an editor at our University of Kentucky Press to develop the idea. And then I originally just wanted to follow one team. And she said, no, we're Kentucky Press, do more teams to show Kentucky. So I did. And then I sent the proposal and she said, oh, well, actually, we just don't do that many sports books. So then I ended up with University of Nebraska Press, which was great because if you're going to do a book on baseball, University of Nebraska Press is the place to be. They specialize in baseball books. Decided, you know what, I think I want the four teams as four different sections. So I do it chronologically, but four different sections for each team and kind of just tell the story starting from before the season with one team. There were the national anthem tryouts. So I follow the little girl all dressed up in her stars and stripes, too scared to get up there to sing, and those types of stories throughout the season.
How would somebody find your book?
It is available on Amazon. You can get it in Kindle. You can now get it used. You can get signed copies if you ask me. Actually, I think they sell some of those on Amazon. You can get it on University of Nebraska Press website.
Tell me it's a Cal Poly bookstore.
Oh, that's a good one. I don't know.
You never asked, did you?
I did ask at the local Barnes & Noble, and last
but
time I
not
checked.
Not at Cal Poly.
I did not check at Cal Poly. Cal Poly is doing a signing for my next book in January or February, so they should have that one.
Oh.
You're right. I need to go check and make sure the library there has it, too.
There you go. And I have to order another one because somebody did not give my copy back.
I think I can help you with that.
Katja Singold, is there anything else you want to add? Now's your time.
Just go out there and watch some baseball and read about it in Bluegrass Baseball. You're in the minor league life.
And who's your favorite team?
Being from the Bay Area, I don't know. As a kid, I kind of had to root for the Giants because they were the underdog. But then the A's became the underdog. And then it goes back and forth. So I could never really decide between the A's and the Giants.
I'm Tom Wilmer. We've been visiting with Katja Singold, the author of Bluegrass Baseball.
Thank you, Tom.
You're very welcome. We'll see you in the outfield or in the infield, huh?
You will.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Seventy-five years ago, World War II ended. It was the deadliest military conflict in history, resulting in 85 million casualties. We mark the anniversary of the end of that war by celebrating the heroism of our greatest generation, those who served and those who supported their efforts at home. Join us virtually or in person September 25th on the Capitol Mall in Washington, D.C., for an Arsenal Democracy flyover by dozens of historic World War II aircraft. Flyovers above the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. are scheduled for 11:30 a.m. and 12:45 p.m. September 25th, a celebration of the peace that followed. Salute their service, honor their hope. For further information, go to 75thww2commemoration.org.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.